Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Media Project brings you a half hour of commentary, analysis, and if we're lucky, even a little insight into the news media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith of the Times Union, here with my colleagues, Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Hi. When was the last time the readers were lucky on this program? I mean, telling them if we're lucky.
If we're lucky, a little insight. You know, we'll let them make that judgment. And Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Dr. Shartok being professor emeritus at the University of Albany, a longtime political scientist, communication professor, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I want to thank both of you guys for showing up. Yeah, really, because you are good at this. You really know your stuff. Hmm. I always feel somewhat cowed, moo, by you know, by the fact that you guys
are
here.
Cowed, moo.
I've always felt you've paid us about what we're worth.
Oh, no, that's not true. The cup of coffee I give you is way more than you deserve.
It's gone from coffee to a bagel to water, and I had to look for my cup.
All right, we start with reader interaction. Don in Lenox, Mass. writes us this. Actually, he says, "Dear Murray and other esteemed panelists," Murray, of course, being
Murray the dog.
Dog to the president of Northeast Public Radio. "Dear Murray and other esteemed panelists, I'm writing about a certain politician whose name I don't want to mention. I don't want to mention because I don't want him to become any more famous. Unfortunately..."
Donald Trump.
"Unfortunately..." Here you are falling into the trap. "Most journalists don't have this concern. Every day I read at least two articles by, quote, respected columnists telling us not to listen to this politician and wishing he would go away. My question is, if they want him to go away, why do they keep putting his name in their headlines? If they don't want us to listen to what he says, why do they keep quoting him? Do I detect the odor of symbiosis? Certainly there are more important things to write about in the world than this politician."
That's a cool letter. Donald Trump now is leading the Republican pack. You can say he's leading it because we bad journalists have been giving him all this attention. But no, Donald Trump happens to be representative of a huge swath of people in this country. And that's what disturbs me the most of it. But I'd like to digress, as I sometimes do, for a moment. Rex, you write a weekly column, a very good weekly column.
Thank you.
Ira, you've written many, many weekly columns, and I write a weekly column or two. There comes that time around Tuesday when you begin to scratch the back of your head. Come on, we're going to tell all here. And you begin to say, now what is it that I'm going to do? Rex, you're busy. You run the Times Union. It's a huge job. Ira, you've done incredible stuff. And I know that you got to sit down, put your fingers on the keyboard and say, okay, fingers, write something. That's true. And you try to think of something that will be important to the people who are reading it. And it certainly seems to me that Donald Trump fits that category pretty well for a lot of reasons.
Well, I want to ask a question based on what I think I heard you say. Do you not believe then that Trump's success so far has in fact been because of the amount of media coverage he's getting, and that if the cable news in particular, but other media did not cover him virtually wall to wall, he would not have the poll numbers he has?
Is that the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's both a political and a media question.
Because sometimes when you stop, you don't really stop. You're ready to keep going.
Me.
You.
Yes.
So I just want to make
sure.
I think you're dodging the question.
No, I think it's all part of the same pickle. It is not our job, Ira, to censor the people we don't like by not talking about them. That's a mistake. Look, Donald Trump could end up as the president of the United States no matter what we say. You have a whole bunch of people, journalists, saying he stinks, he's terrible. On both sides, the conservative side, the liberal side, but it doesn't seem to stop Trump. That may speak more to the influence that the journalists don't have. But I think it's perfectly appropriate to keep on talking about this guy, especially when you can point out his foibles.
You can't avoid talking about, if you're going to talk about the presidential race at all, you can't avoid talking about the front runner, about the guy who sets himself apart from the pack by being outrageous, by being a billionaire, able to fund his own campaign. I mean, you can... I do think there is a valid question about, but which none of us have ever figured out how to deal with, is this. We know that the issues a president confronts are not those that you really deal with in the campaign trail. We know that a lot of what we write about in columns, what the TV stations focus on, especially these cable channels, is not what really confronts the occupant of the White House, but it is what moves voters. It is what draws attention. And you always say, well, we should have more issue-oriented coverage, but of course, people don't pay attention to it. You can lead a horse to water, can't make him drink, right?
You are right. But in fact, I'm fascinated by the fact that what do you call him now? Jeb Bush.
Right. Or as Colbert says, Jeb, because he's got the exclamation point.
Yeah. Jeb is running for president, too. He's not doing well. He's polling very badly. And by the way, I think, as I remember the money that has been given, he's in the lead of the most money that's been given.
Yeah.
But he's still not polling anywhere near Trump's 33% or whatever he's at right now. So the other day, there was a small piece in the papers about Jeb Bush coming up with a plan to basically give more money back to rich people.
Uh-huh.
You guys saw it, right?
Absolutely,
right.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it got some attention.
It's basically doubling down on George W. Bush's tax cuts.
Yeah.
Basically saying, yeah, we'll give more back.
But let's
let me just finish the thought here, if I may, Ira. And that is, because I want to make sure I get the microphone back at some point.
yeah, I know.
It's always tough for him to get his word in.
Yeah, I know. The guy has no voice.
But here this guy does a substantive thing. Why? Well, he got the most money from the rich people. Now he's going to give the rich people something back and say, stick with me. You know, I'm going to take care of you. That's a very important substantive thing, but it doesn't get nearly the attention of a Trump.
Exactly. And so let's go back to what you used the word censorship. I'm not suggesting that Trump be censored. I'm just questioning whether or not the media, and in particular the cable news networks, have become derelict in their responsibility to cover this race fairly by disproportionately covering Trump. I mean, CNN had scheduled an anniversary special about Katrina and promoted it heavily, and they blew it off at the last minute to cover a Trump press conference, at which Trump essentially said what he's been saying at all of the other press conferences that he's covered. Would they have blown it off for a Christie press conference or for a Bush press conference? I think the answer is obviously they don't. So again, I go back to my point. The amount of coverage that he is getting, I believe, has contributed mightily to the favorable numbers that he's getting in the polls.
This is disproportionately true of cable television.
Yes.
We realize that cable TV needs fresh content 24 hours a day. They wish to have fresh content. A lot of it is rehash. But because that has become so much more of a player in the media picture, when people say the media is doing this, what they generally mean is cable news.
Yes.
And so there is a lot of this focus on the ins and outs of campaigning, what draws attention, what gets pictures. And that has been a trend that has been going on since 1968.
Poof. I'm going to make both of you guys the co-leaders of CNN. You got MSNBC, you got CNN, and of course you have Fox, which some people would say the evil Fox, but you have Fox. The guy wakes up in the morning, he knows he's fired, or you guys wake up in the morning, you know you're fired if you don't have good stuff that people are going to want to watch. So you scratch your head and you go lower in your body and you scratch that too, and then you say, what is it that people want to get? And intuitively, you know it's Trump.
You're right. It's just that it is more, that is part of the media equation. It's part of the equation here on WAMC. You don't pay no attention at all to what people want. And that is always part of the juxtaposition in the commercial media. Commercial here in WAMC in the sense that you need underwriting and you need support from listeners. You pay some attention to what people want and you pay some attention to what you think they need. I think the imbalance is in cable television news, an awful lot of it is showbiz as opposed to substance, right?
Okay, I could respond to the cheap shot on WAMC.
It's a reasonable accusation.
But
I don't think it's a
not
cheap
reasonable
shot.
Because this
you
radio
station pay no attention to what the listeners want. This, you just make your decisions this, based entirely upon your intellectual this, pursuit, right?
This radio station has never said to our underwriters, "Are you happy with this story or that story?"
No, I'm not saying that.
No, but if the Media Project didn't attract enough listeners to make it worth the half hour, you would take it off the air tomorrow.
No, that's not true. We've left many, many bad shows on the air.
That's true. There's a lot of lousy programming.
Now, how did that leap come?
We got many, many.
Sorry, I'm on only every other week.
There used to be this guy, Professor Roland Nadeau. I've spoken to him often. He's dead now, so I can do this. And he used to have a program called A Note to You. It was a classical music program, and it was just terrible. I don't know how long it's
his name was Professor Roland Nadeau. Right.
Nadeau. Whatever. And then he used to say, "Here's what a triplet sounds like, ding, ding, ding." And then he'd say, "Here's what a triplet sounds like, ding, ding, ding. Let me play that for you one more time. Here's a triplet." I say, "If that guy does it one more time, off he comes." Finally, he did it one more time. We took him off. But the fact of the matter is, you know, there are programs that on commercial television, radio, and here that, you know, they don't attract a lot of people.
So are you on Trump's side regarding his claim that CNN, which is televising the next debate coming up in a few days, and is selling ads at an extraordinary multiple from what its normal ad rates are, expects to make a huge amount of money.
Right.
Trump is asking Jeff Zucker, the head of CNN, to donate the profits of this debate to veterans groups.
Smart move.
It's
embarrassing.
So you agree with him then?
What, do I agree with
him? Yeah, should CNN do that?
No.
Aha. But, of course, that gets Trump another headline. That's an example,
exactly.
I think, of what Don in Lenox, our listener who wrote to us, would be saying we shouldn't be paying attention to. It is, after all, just a ploy, right? Isn't it, for Trump?
Of course it's a ploy.
We shouldn't question Donald Trump's
sincerity. Well, but let's explain this. If the three of us are in agreement that CNN is not obligated to donate profits, why do you suppose? Aren't there many listeners out there who are saying, well, yeah, Trump is drawing millions and millions of people to this debate and all this money. He's right. It should go to charity. Why should CNN not do that?
Well, he doesn't make business decisions for CNN. That's ridiculous.
Right. Why doesn't Donald Trump devote all of his revenue to charity as well? I mean, why doesn't he give a lot more? I wonder how much he gives to charity out of his supposed $10 billion fortune. I guess he says it's much more than that. But, you know, the question that you might raise also about the coverage of the presidential campaign comes from the nature of the PAC. And we've been talking about this ever since about 1972 when Tim Krause wrote about the McGovern campaign, The Boys on the Bus. That was the title of his book, but that has become a term that is widely used, The Boys on the Bus. In those days, it was all boys.
And they explore things like PAC journalism.
Exactly.
And things like that.
And the question is this, if there are fewer people doing it these days, the traveling press corps, and apparently right now only Hillary Clinton has a robust enough operation to actually offer a press bus, but sooner or later, as the pack of candidates narrows down, there will be more press buses and so on. And the problem is that you get people all doing the same story, all going the same direction, like a little pack, like little junior hockey players all following the puck up the ice, you
that's
know,
a great image.
Passing it. That's what the reporters are like.
And you've told great stories, Rex, back in the day when somebody came up with a ridiculous story and you got a call from your editor saying, "Hey, why aren't you going to
this? Why don't you do this?" You know, I was a substitute on the presidential campaign trail, so I was never actually on the bus. And I, therefore, was frustrated sometimes by not getting access to some stuff.
Sure.
Trailing along behind. There is an advantage to being on the bus. But the disadvantage of being on the bus is that you tend to feel that pressure, not that your colleagues are saying, "Come on, Rex, do that story," but you really see what's happening. You all see the same thing. It's all orchestrated for you. It's a really difficult problem.
But before we go on, I just want to compliment Don for his excellent letter because it's provocative and it's the kind of thing that a sociologist or political scientist with his yellow notes might talk about as opposed to the reality of what it's like to be competitive in this business. I mean, you don't get to make the choices that Don may be indicating you can make.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Well, we've talked about it many times. I think you guys talked about it last week. And another factor as
you listen.
I do. I listen all the time. The show ought to be an hour, by the way. The boys on the bus, there are fewer boys or girls on the bus because the newspapers and other media do not have as many people and are not able to devote sending out people full time, particularly when there are, 18, 25 candidates. There's just not enough bodies out there. And so as a result, there are candidates who are largely going uncovered. And the decisions about who should be and who shouldn't be covered are made in assignment rooms by editors and producers. And that helps drive the dialogue of the narrative of the campaign.
And the question is, who's getting played?
Right.
Think about that.
Exactly. I think that's Don's point. For a July trip to the U.S.-Mexico border, Donald Trump commissioned two coach buses to accommodate 100 journalists who went down, and they all took the same picture of Donald Trump along the border. You know, there was no originality to that reporting.
And the other day, he gives a little shout-out to Ted Cruz, who comes with him somewhere. So that's interesting. Here are two competitive guys, and Trump has decided that Cruz should have some publicity.
Well, they kind of pal around. It's interesting. Cruz has played very close to Trump.
Right.
He's the one candidate in the
Vice President
platform.
Cruz, that is?
Oh, geez. Anyway.
On the other hand, Huckabee wouldn't let Cruz on the stage when Huckabee was involved with that thing in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
So he was physically blocked from getting on the stage, Cruz was.
Well, from one spectacle to another. By the way, if you want to write to us and participate in the Media Project, media@wamc.org is our email address. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith here with you from lovely downtown Albany, New York, giving you an opportunity to hear some thoughts on the media news of the week. Now, as I was saying, from one spectacle to another, here comes Pope Francis. Woohoo! The papal visit is coming up. He's coming to New York, Philadelphia, and Washington. And
It's huge.
Time Warner Cable is going to have a separate channel, telecasting around the clock from the opening event of a mass in Havana on September 20th until Shepherd One, that's what his jet is called, lifts off from Philadelphia on September 27th. So for a whole week, 15 million households apparently are going to have the papal channel.
Commercial free?
I doubt that.
Right. And then should the profits go to the church?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Maybe to the... Maybe so. I had to govern myself from speaking up there.
But I'm a huge fan of this Pope. Really, huge fan. I think he's done so many good things. I think he brings a lot of hope to a lot of people. His recent announcement of the new annulment policy, for example, gets a lot of substantive play, you know, for what he's done. And if I'm sitting there, as I told you guys, Poof, you are the head of the CNN, I'd do the same thing. I think it's a brilliant move.
Well, I must confess. I mean, I am not part of the flock. Oh, I must confess. No pun intended. I'm not part of the
flock.
Bless
you, my son.
And every time a pope has come to this country, it in fact has had huge coverage, and now this time will be more so because there's more places for it to be covered.
And he's a better pope.
I don't know the numbers, and I find it interesting and somewhat overwhelming to see the amount of coverage, because there are people in this country who are not as interested in the Pope or are not of the flock. I'm not even sure that I'm saying anything negative.
Hey, I'm Jewish, and I'm going to watch it.
You are? Well, I guess that's all right. Well, that's the question.
I think this guy's great. I think he's made a huge impact, for example, on climate warming and on some of the things that the church has done in the past, which don't stand the test of time. He's been a very good pope. And as a world leader, I'm going to watch him.
Well, he would be covered as heavily if he was not a very good pope.
I don't know that
Pope Benedict, for example, in a visit to the U.S. would have had quite the attention. When John Paul II first came, I remember being when he first became Pope. Remember, he was such a breath of fresh air. He was young. He wasn't yet 60, I think. And I remember being in D.C. that weekend, and as his Pope mobile cruised along down the middle of the National Mall, I happened to be there, and it gave me chills. And I'm not a part of that flock either, but there's something about the celebrity, something about the presence of this figure that just makes him a remarkable presence. So it's showbiz part of it. A lot of it is showbiz. Of course, the construction of the throne that he will sit on in New York City, the way that he dresses, you know, a lot of it is showbiz. I mean, there's a lot of theatrics in all of religion, but you kind of can't avoid it. And if you're going to be covering the news, plus if you're a cable operator like Time Warner Cable, why not give him his
own
channel? Well,
yes, without a doubt. But I think it's safe to say that this is something that's going to push Donald Trump off of CNN for a few days.
I don't know. Maybe Trump will have something to say about the Pope.
Well, St. Patrick's Cathedral is right down the block from Trump Tower, so I suppose.
Did you even know that there's a network called EWTN, Eternal
yes,
Word Television Network?
Yes, I knew it.
Network. I
did
know that.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I knew it.
I didn't know.
Well, you can't mistake it, because when you got the clicker in your hand and you're going through all of the things, there it is. There's the EWTN. It's the religious network, right, Rex?
Now, what about the huge story that is going on around the globe, which is competing for attention? That is the migrant crisis now confronting Europe, confronting the globe, this tremendous flood of refugees. The question that I have to ask is whether we have had a lot of coverage in print. You see it on the front page of the serious newspapers. You see the sensational video of the flood of refugees. The question that I really wonder is whether we have seen enough of the coverage of the events leading up to this, if we understand enough of the humanitarian crisis that provoked it, and then what's going to happen 6, 9, 12 months from now following up on this flood of refugees. Are we going to have the kind of coverage of this that we're having now with this transition? What's going on? What's going to happen next?
It seems to me some of this has to do with good investigative journalism and good journalism in general. Look, the United States has 12 million, at least 12 million, that we know of who came into this country who are undocumented and who deserve to know what's going on. But they're not given citizenship. They're not taken care of. And yet there are people crying out with some justification, we have to do our share for these Syrians who are coming in. Now you get an investigative journalist. Are we going to look and see, because people are already screaming, you're going to be letting some guys from Al-Qaeda and ISIS into this country.
No
and
doubt.
You better know what's going on.
Yeah, I think there's very little doubt that that's likely to happen, that there are likely to be players with intent to cause harm who will be a part of the migrant flight.
And what are the implications? So, for example, we see the head Ayatollah in Iran this morning saying, no Israel in 25 years, we've got to get rid of them, and going along that way. So now, let's say a country allows, particularly a country with a background of anti-Semitism like France, for example, lets huge numbers of Syrians in. I guarantee you they're not going to say, because you let us in, we're now friends of Israel. Quite the opposite. So the politics of the nation, and this is where the media comes in to do a good analysis, the politics of the nation has to be explored.
The cultural change that will be coming from this, and yet it is a great topic for journalists to dig into, the peril of the cultural change versus the humanitarian responsibility to take care of our neighbors.
Sure.
You know, these are really interesting and rich, rich topics, but they tend to be oversimplified, of course, by political figures, not just in this country, not just by those who are running for president here, but by political figures all over the place. You get the simplistic answers, keep our country strong, stop this sort of stuff. And since the ethical responsibility of journalists is to seek the truth and report it fully, that full reporting means going beyond those sound bites.
And do you know whether the media, particularly the print media in Europe, is suffering the same economic hardships as are we here? And in fact they are, that would limit their ability to tell the story. Of course, we already know that American media is going to have a difficult time telling the story, again, because it does not have the resources.
That's a great question.
Much of this story, again, is going to be driven by pictures and video, as it has in the last few weeks. So to your question, if we're going to continue to see streams of thousands of people and the dead babies on the shore, or a photographer tripping a family as they're trying to gain freedom, those pictures are going to show up. But I don't know where that investigative journalism is going to come from.
Well, actually, the next time Rosemary's on the program, and she is a coach for investigative journalists around the world, we'll have her talk about
that. But that's a great question that Ira has asked, whether or not other countries are feeling the same backlash that we have had in this country.
It varies. I mean, I've actually had some journalists in my newsroom this summer from other countries. And I will say that everybody is feeling the impact of the digital age, but the impact, it varies by country, partly based upon whether they have a tradition of national publications as opposed to local.
Yeah.
So that's all we have time for. There's a lot more to come. Oh, too bad.
I feel bad. But Rex, you really ought to allow this to be an hour.
and I'll be back next week.
That's a rare back-to-back appearance. Oh, it's a wonderful thing. Yes. Back-to-back. All right. Thanks for joining us this week on the Media
Belly
Project.
To belly.
Peppermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper gill. Got a free new world to build.